I'm talking to you. This is what I would say a combination application of podcasting. So this is a double bill. You're getting charged twice for this. Listening to this, I am really excited. Chris Stout here with the Root Zone Podcast. I'm sitting next to Kevin Salters, the owner of Root Development out of where?
Suffield, Connecticut, which is, if anyone knows anything about Connecticut, it's basically the town over from our one airport that we have. So it's a Massachusetts border. I'm in the northern end of Connecticut.
Give me the biggest city.
Hartford.
Okay.
Springfield, Hartford, right in between.
Gotcha. Kevin is here. We're doing this like little joint podcasting thing. We're both kind of new to this, and Kevin's down here for like kind of a trade show thing that's going on down here in Jersey. And what better way for two podcasters to get together than meet in my shop in good old Pottstown, Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I'm excited for a couple of reasons. One, I don't have to ask the questions. And two, I get to see your shop, which is always cool to really to collaborate with other people, like-minded turf managers, businesses. And it's tough when you're in your area because people can't be as open as they normally are. Here, we've got 300 miles between us, so our competitions aren't any of competition of each other.
Yeah.
So we can talk about some trade secrets and go through some things. But, you know, to see your operation, we went over your mixing station, how you do the whole thing, you know, that's all just soaking into my brain for expansion on my part.
Yeah. It's cool to see you here. And I think my podcast is a little different. You know, you have the Turf and Nutrition Management Podcast.
Yep.
You are primarily focused on the green industry, obviously, and how we can feed our soils and how we can be better managers of turf and better business owners. Well, the Root Zone Podcast has obviously a heavy influence on, you know, from the green industry, with me being in the green industry, but the services industry is always interesting to me, having plumbers on here and Chris from the media company and just anyone that's providing a service out there. It's my question to you is, where did you get your start? How did you end up in lawn care? Listening to your podcast, I know you work for Brightview, right, for a while, Russo.
Yep.
Heard great things about Russo and even Brightview at times. And so it's good for the people that are listening, especially to this podcast. How did you get to where you are, and why are you, you know, just talking to you before we got on here, you sound like you're pretty happy where you're at, right? And from what I got from you, it was never really about the paycheck. It was really about how happy you are with what you're doing in your life with, you know, the people you love, things like that.
Great lead off, because I think you nailed it perfectly. Maybe you have a degree in psychology and you don't realize it, but for me, yes, the money will follow the happiness. And I think that's very important because so many people work for the money hoping to be happy. And everyone will say, oh, I'd rather die rich and I can make happiness with money. Sure, you can in the short term, but it's amazing. If you find something that you really, really enjoy, the money will come. It will follow that. Back to the beginning of where I started, I literally have been in this business since I've been 14 years old. I'm 54, so quick math is 40 years of this crazy stuff. In and out of the green space itself, but in the service-based industry. And quick story, funny, of how I started was a neighborhood landscaper in the neighborhood I lived in, and I did motocross. So it was a habit that needed a lot of money that my parents weren't going to pay for. So I worked for this gentleman. His name was Adam Karkovich, and he taught me a ton of stuff. What a great dude. Our first job was putting in 150 arborvitaes to section off a back area for privacy. And no one had power tools. You didn't have bobcats. You didn't have skid steers. You didn't have augers. So be that as it may, he brought in a bunch of people. We got it all done. But I really didn't know the reason why we were doing this for this customer. Well, this would have been, let's see, 79, 81, somewhere around there. Let's say 81. There was this thing called massage parlors that were real popular. And they did more than massaging, let's say. And we had two of them in our town. Well, this was the owner of that. Adam sends me over there to mow. And back then, you didn't have walk-behinds. You didn't have all these zero turns. We had a big John Deere tractor that you sat on. And when I was 14, I could sit on that seat. I could see over the brick wall around his pool. Mm. And all his ladies were there, scantily clad with nothing. Man. I was hooked. 14 years old. Yeah. Money, naked ladies. I'm in. I'll mow that lawn every day. And that's a God's honest truth of what happened. But it was more the money and the satisfaction of really completing a service and being rewarded, one, only by the not only by the money, but by the customer coming out and seeing real turn, real justification of what you did. Because there's not a lot of things in the corporate world, which I was involved with in the landscape part, and that was hard, of turning numbers, forecasting, doing all that stuff, and getting that gratification that you really need to drive. I mean, if you're an entrepreneur, you know, you're really that seek, hunt, kill person, and you channel that inside to an office, and it gets hard. And
yeah.
Some people can break it, and they can use it in a positive way, and I think I did that okay with Russo, and then when it moved into the corporate level, I was just done. It was too much.
Yeah. I left. When I left Go Green, I was just, it wasn't anything wrong with them. Like you said, it was just not who, I wasn't myself. An old employee reminded me, he's like, you aged like a president when you're at Go Green.
That's funny, because when I left Brightview, one of the guys that was with me at Russo Forever, he said the same thing. He called me Obama. He's like, what? I didn't get it. He goes, dude, the 2 years here, you aged like Obama in the White House.
So overweight.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah. And so when you look back on it, you're like, all right, you work for Russo. You know, you talk about them a lot on your podcast, how you love working there. Yeah. And, you know, Brightview, if you were to stay with Brightview, who knows where they're number one. They're the top dogs, right, in the country for everything. Do you think the benefits, you could have gotten a position there where you would have been happy in your life? Or do you think that what you're doing now with Root Development and, you know, podcasting is, I think, kind of like it is for me. It's more of a passion project. It's fun. I love the networking aspect of it. But do you ever look back and say, oh, man, maybe if I was at Brightview, I would be? No.
No, and I'm shaking my head and no one can see that. But I would work for their company again. I really would, in a different level. Being a branch manager was difficult. Coming from a company that was sold into that company and having our old habits, moving into their Brightview new habits was difficult to mesh that. Mm-hmm. And then I was the cheerleader. And then you throw on top of that, it was COVID. So, you know, we got our ears wet in the Brightview formality. And then all of a sudden COVID rolls in. And then every day I'm out cheerleading. And remember, we all know that it wasn't a big deal now. But at the time, it was scary shit. It really was. And I'm trying to promote these guys to come to work every day. You know, we had it where only one person was in a truck. We rented vehicles so people could drive to the jobs and not be in the same truck. Sanitation stations. We had cards set up every day that you would write with a wax marker on there that it was disinfected and cleaned and by who, and stuck in the window so people weren't afraid to get back into that vehicle. The mower sanitized every day. It was a major, major ordeal. And that went on for a year and a half. It was hard to come in and cheerlead these guys that were part of my life for 10 years. And then now, whether we are Russo or Brightview, now basically try to make it so it's okay for them to go to work every day because what El Jefe said was right. So there was a lot of weight on our shoulders of, we think it's okay. The stats weren't out yet.
Yeah.
We did have some people get sick, and thank God that it was just
contrary
sick.
Contrary to the opposite.
Correct.
Which was my first year of business, which was COVID year. And I was on pins and needles. I had gotten the loan from the bank. I had secured all this stuff. I had bought half the equipment. They're like, who is an essential worker? That was the question, right? It was who, obviously, you got police, fire, you got everybody. And thank God they said landscaping. And they defined it as landscaping, which I've always been annoyed by, that we're under that definition as a landscaper. But in that scenario, I felt lucky.
So I have no proof of that, but I would like to think that probably Brightview and some of the larger companies got on board with some lobbyists to make that happen.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Well, publicly
no
traded
way.
Company. Believe it or not.
The money got behind it?
No. Well, maybe just a little bit that yeah. time. It was just one time, though.
Yeah. Yeah, just this once.
Yeah. But it worked out, and I see it because snow removal, and it is what it is. But it was scary times. And you take the compounding stress of that, and then the corporate side of it. So now you're working for your clients as well, but then you're working for investors. Totally, totally different when you have to roll up your budget and your earnings weekly on a national call to see how our unit is doing to roll up to wherever the stock guy was going to be pitching our stocks to be sold. That was crazy. You go from being just a landscaper to now all of a sudden I'm some college educated finance guy, which I was not. And my boss that was there, that was above me, I guess general manager of our region, Dave, was awesome. He's still awesome. Awesome dude, awesome teacher, the best attitude going out there all the time. Hey, you screw something up, just let me know. We can fix it. Yeah. Just let me know. And really, I've seen him fix some things with people's lives and errors they made that were personal issues but brought to work, and he corrected them, and they're still there as great people. So do I ever think myself, oh, I wish I was still there, I would be in this position better than I am?
But no. I think it comes to almost a simple point is that wasn't just how – you know, I think I became an entrepreneur and did this just because I didn't want to be in that environment. And not because that environment's wrong, not because that environment doesn't pay well, not because I want to make sure that I'm clear that I'm not saying how you choose to live your life, I'm not saying is better or worse. But I'm saying certain people like can deal with, like, I'm not a big corporate guy. I'm not that educated. I don't write good emails. Like, I don't want to sit in finance hearings and meetings and stuff like that. That's just not me, right? Or hearings, not the right word, but meetings, right? And I just like to be kind of in the grind of it and, like, grow this little tiny small business. Was that?
Well, so back when it was Russo, we all had a voice. We really did. And Mike did a really, really good job. Sure, he was the top dog when the shit hit the fan. And that was always a nice safety net to have. But he let, as long as you showed proof, he let you go out and test your philosophies to see if we could make more money or be more efficient or do a better job. And he would cheerlead you the whole way through. If for some reason something went sideways, he was always there. And he's not a hugger. He's not one of those guys. But to sit down in a business sense and say, all right, where do we screw up? And I remember he said it numerous times, but the first time he said it, we're all around a board meeting and we're trying to figure something out. I can't remember what. And he raised his hand. He goes, anyone ever run a $6 million business before in this room? And no, including him, was no. I mean, we grew to that number and none of us had experience doing it.
Yeah.
He slowly got there. So he had a great mindset for that, which is kind of hard to do, but that kind of, I think, gave me the spark to make management decisions almost as if it was my own company. Mm-hmm. And then I think once you start that fire, it builds.
Yeah.
And then you realize that when you go for and work in another organization where you can make certain decisions, but not really, and you kind of have some reins on you, you kind of like that open pasture feeling a little bit better and controlling your own destiny. Mm-hmm. And sure, you hear it all the time where I can go in, I can get my paycheck, I can get my benefits, I can get my retirement. That's great. There's plenty of people that can do that. But I firmly believe that there's people like you and me and the rest of the people in our trades that are what has built this country and what's going to turn this country back around.
Yeah.
We really need that service-based industry, those people that can't sleep at night because they want to go to the next job or they want to keep things going. That's the mentality that isn't taught in our schools anymore. You know, it's not brought into our children. And it can even be fault as parents because we want our kids to do better. I mean, when my family came over from Ireland, all they did was work so that the next generation was better and better and better. And you lose some of that along the way of what's better. Is better giving them more or is better making them work harder for what they get?
It's an on-demand world. And it's so, so that's what's scary for me is that, like, everything you want is at your fingertips, right? And one of my employees, Eric, he we talked about this. He ends up he used to own an eyeglass store, and really, like, they started to lose some customers just because it was so easy to buy prescription eyeglasses online, and it was very quick. Well, just like if you're looking up a service, you're going to see the top dogs out there in your plumbing industry, in your construction industry, the people that are spending the big dollars on Google and Instagram ads and everything like that. There's a big push for DIY and stuff like that. I see what you're saying, but it's harder, like even for myself, like I find myself even doing it. I'm on Amazon when I want to buy a gift or something like that. When I know I'm a small business owner, I could go within, there's 30 stores within the area that I should go buy a small gift from. But I'm a convenient, I love convenience.
I think we're all becoming, unfortunately, numb to that and doing it automatically. It becomes a reflex now.
And that's hard for a small business because we're not as accessible as the bigger businesses, right? So if you want to support us, you really have to dig for us. Not really dig for us, but you. We're not Walmart, we're not Amazon, we're not Home Depot, we're not Lowe's, where if you need, I don't know. Does that make sense? Am I making any sense here?
It makes total sense. You're basically calling us hypocrites. And rightfully so, to some degree. Not that it matters. There's one big box store that's blue that I don't go and shop in for many different reasons. But I'm blessed in my town. We have a gem. We have our local hardware store, George. George is awesome. And he has everything that you almost need. Sometimes you don't. And I bust on him all the time. I'm like, George, you're going to send me across the bridge, so I have to cross the Connecticut River over to the next town and deal with all the traffic to go to the Home Depot or yada, yada, yada. And I'll support him all day long, and his prices are higher, and I'm okay with that. And I love that. And But let's say I need a new cable for the podcaster. What do you do? The app on the phone came in less than 24 hours. It was at the top of my door.
It's a conundrum.
It sucks.
Because you want to teach your kids this – you know, there's the big, you know, kids on iPads and things like that. And I tell my wife and I tell my friends this. I'm like, I kind of want my kids to be on this stuff because they need to know how to use it. They need to know all this. They need to know how fast the world's going to move. And I can't keep up with it. I thought, you know, you're in your 50s. I'm in my 40s. And I can't keep up with the social media trends and everything that comes along with it. So are we hypocrites?
I mean,
are we like, let's stay in our ways and do this, but is it a hybrid approach? I think it's got to be.
I think it's a hybrid, and I think where, you know, we go back to us and the newer generation may not have it, except for the breed that I'm meeting through the podcast and going around and visiting shops is the service base in the green industry and plumbers, electricians, what they have is they offer great services, and they offer it with being congeal about what they do.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where I think the convenience factor kind of goes by the wayside of hitting a button. And we all have that. We have websites. We have CRM systems. We have this, you know, a perfect example, social media. I had no idea. That's why we hired Jessica, Creative Content by Jessica. She does an amazing job. I took a bunch of videos and pictures on the way down here. Tonight, I'll download them and send them to her, and she'll put a video together of my travel to Stout Lawn Care. It's going to be cool. And then tomorrow, we'll be at Turf Trade at their event, and she'll do the same thing with that. I couldn't do that. I really couldn't. I don't have the patience for it. But, you know, your kids are younger than mine. Them needing to have those skills are almost very important to succeed moving forward in business.
They also should have classes on when to take out a credit card and what an interest rate is. That would be nice if they taught that at a young age too.
So we had this class called consumer math when I was there, and it was mandatory, and it was a little bit about balancing a checkbook and this and that, but unfortunately was not a focal point of math. It was more of adding letters and all this crazy stuff, which it's funny because in the landscape world, algebra comes into it when you're doing hardscape compaction rates, you're doing finding areas of circle, all that stuff. I did find out afterwards, like, wow, that stuff in math was kind of important. But we've gone away from the whole basic home financing. No one knows how to budget their house. No different. You know, we all have budgets. Whether we're running a business or running your house, you have a budget. And just think of how many people that are failing in their home budget would do at a work budget or if they owned a business. It wouldn't work. So that's why.
Well, it's funny you say that. I know my budget for work. You brought. I don't know my home budget.
Stacy does
that.
Are
you kidding me?
And I think it's. I think it's because I don't want to do it.
But
I would do it one time. But
one of my like pitches, and when I'm on a lawn, is like, you got to let me know what your budget is for lawn care, right? that's part of their home budget, and I'm assuming they have a home budget.
So if they asked you, you'd be like, I don't know.
I don't pay for this stuff. Yeah,
let me ask the wife.
Yeah, yeah. You got to ask you for what our home budget is for Windows. I don't have a home budget for lawn care.
It's fair enough. I think there's a lot of things that we expect people to know.
Yeah.
And they don't.
Yeah.
And they're numb to it just because I think they're in that rut of that paycheck comes in, this goes to my car payment, this goes here, goes there, and we've got a little bit left over for Starbucks and a couple beers at the end of the week.
Well, I'll tell you what, like it's gotten a lot. You know, people say, oh, the first year is going to be every year has been exponentially harder for Stout Lawn Care. Like, and weird, hard in a different way. It's like the first 2 years were like, rah, 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 let's go. It's been so fun to grow this business. And then it's like, okay, we're making a little money. We have to make sure that it's going in the right places at the right times. And then you really have a budget and you really want to know your numbers. And it becomes a little harder on the backside, for sure.
So are you saying the honeymoon is over?
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you think the honeymoon would take this long to end, or did you think it would not end?
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I know my personality, and I have like a 5-year cycle in my head, and I think that a lot of that has to do with, and it's not anything bad. I'm not saying I'm going to sell Stout Lawn and Pest right now, but I'm saying that it gets a little harder. The energy is not there, but then I do stuff like this. And the energy goes skyrocketing, or I go to Florida for a conference, or I do a video like we did earlier today with my business partner, Steve. Like, then the energy skyrockets. But it's just a different, like I said, it's a different grind. It's a different feeling when you're a little bit, now I'm, just a different grind. That's all. I still love it.
So do you think it's the winter doldrums coming in right now?
Oh, I get seasonal depression.
Oh, thank you. I just, literally, last week was miserable. We, up our way, Connecticut, we had 10 plus days, maybe a little bit longer, where we didn't see the sun. Mm-hmm. I know that for a couple of reasons. One, both my wife and I were miserable, and we know why. We have solar on a roof. It wasn't kicking back anything. It's like the whole 9 yards is like it was that gray. And having snow and then sun would have been totally fine, but it literally was mud season our way, just rainy, cloudy. And I get into that on top of, I think, having that entrepreneur mentality. And it happens later in the season. I'll explain that next. But once you get into this time where you're not needed, we feel that void very quickly. When we're out servicing lawns, we're needed, and we're felt as if we're somewhat important to our clients, which we are. That same thing happens once you get through that spring rush and the phone is shut down. You start double-checking yourself, like, wait a minute, is the website up? Is my phone still on? I'm not getting calls anymore. And then you're like, man, maybe I'm not doing that good of a job. Are our services that good? Did I mess something up? Did something bad get set out on social media? I think that we almost need that constant little pat in the rear end to keep us moving along when you're
It's funny you said that. I was driving to see my mom the other day, and I was driving. I was almost in tears, like overwhelmed with like I have so much going on in my life. I started this podcast. I want to commit to that. I have this business that's getting more difficult, but it's still fun to run and doing all this other stuff. And I was like, oh, man. But you're right. I think it's a lot to do with the beginning of the season. There is a lot going on right now. The kids, there's a lot going on right now. And you almost do have to step back a little bit and say, all right, I'm still doing a great job. And I used to try to tell that when I was dealing with a lot of customer interactions, like the only phone calls we were getting were bad calls. You have to just say, like, you have X amount of customers, we're only getting this many phone calls, it's not that bad. You know, I did over 7,000 applications last year, and we did like 61 service calals.
Yeah, that's so insignificant.
It's so insignificant, but we're obsessing over it over the winter. How can we make it better?
But of those, let's call it easy math, 60 service calls, how many of them were justified too?
50%.
See? So now we're down to 30.
Yeah.
So,
how many of those were just the conversation that needed to be happening with the customer to set realistic expectation? Another 50%.
Right.
Down to 15 that were missed applications.
But it's still, it hurts. I mean, mm-hmm. you don't want any of them, but I think that's unrealistic, and I think we all need some of them to keep us in check. But, you know, if you're running a program and your guys are out there doing a job to where you're getting that few of service calls, that's a huge success. It really, really is. We just don't think of it that way.
No. We're worried about everything else.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, and then there's the things to worry about. You know, your trucks are on the road, accidents, this, that, lawsuits.
You know what's to worry about, Kevin?
Is how many goddamn brake pads I've gone through the last 4 years that I did not budget the first three. It was like, I was like, oh, I went to the mechanic and just...
You have too many stops. That's what it is. You have too many accounts.
Too many stop signs in the little areas, many hills. But yeah, it's just as you learn as a business owner, it's just one of those things I didn't really account for. I forgot how fast I could go through brake pads. Oh. And if you go through a brake pad and you don't realize that you went through a brake pad,
then it gets expensive fast.
Then it gets expensive fast, you know, and that's happened twice. So that'll never happen again. And hiring the right people, you know, I got my guy Silver Fox. He's my right-hand man now, and he's really OCD, and he's creating a maintenance schedule and a list, and you know, get that to Steve, the right people that know what to do with it, and put it on the, you know, we're looking at a couple different programs that'll allow us to customize how we get our information, not just an Excel program. So we'll mess with that a little bit. But I have a question for you, another question. You did all this hardscaping. You know a lot. You probably know a lot about trees. You know a lot about all the landscaping industry in general. Probably know how to run lighting. Probably can do irrigation if you wanted to.
I'm not going to brag, but I have done them all. So
all of it, right?
I climbed trees for 18 years in conjunction with the landscaping, so always needed extra money. Hardscaping, way back when hardscaping was just clay brick and pressure-treated timbers. That was hardscaping. When concrete pavers first came into the market, there was a company in a town near me that brought them in. They went to us and our competitor at the time. They're still in business, Baylor Brothers. They do an amazing job. And they said, hey, we want you guys to try this stuff. And next thing you know, you could offer bricks that weren't brick color. It's like, wow, this is cool. So, yeah, I've been in the hardscaping all that long. Low voltage lighting, we did a ton of it. One of our biggest jobs was a guy, he's out in Texas now, a guy named Glenn Beck. I'm sure you've heard of him.
I think I have.
So he was on Fox News, and then he ended up going and starting his own called The Blaze, be that as it may. When he was in Connecticut, he had major security issues, so we did a huge low-voltage lighting job at his property just to light up shadows and the wood line and all that stuff to keep his family safe when he wasn't there. Cool job. So, yeah, I've done them all, hardscaping, but what's your question? Again, I don't really talk about me much, so this is kind of weird. I'm not a big
promotion. But so you've done it all.
Yep.
You know the profit margins and everything. Yep. You know how much work. Why did you fall on turf care?
That's easy. It's the easiest on your body.
Really?
So when I worked with Grassman and Tick Be Gone, we were Landmark Landscaping prior to that, and that's where all the hardscape was, and major, major jobs. Very, very successful business. They moved down to the Charlotte area to take care of that boom that happened in that area, and it was just when my twins were born, so that would have been in 96. 97 they moved down. And they wanted us to move down, my wife and the kids, the babies, and I just couldn't take that risk. So that's when I stayed up here and got involved with Distinctive Tree and yada, yada, yada. But when Craig came back and started Grassman and Tick Be Gone, he made perfect sense because his body was hurting very much. He said, listen, Kevin, we can propose to these guys that are out digging trees, pounding pavers, stacking stone, we can get them to do turf applications, make probably more money than they are, and go home and be sane. They would definitely be feeling better, more energetic, and be able to spend the money that they just made. And the light bulb went off. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I go home. I'm not that tired. It's easy compared to the other ones. Also, as we move forward in the business world, which wasn't even available back then, it is the most desired company or services to buy of a private equity firm because of the loyalty of your customers. There's great profit margins in it, and systems can be put in place if you do sell your company from a private equity management company. So let's say a private equity firm that has $500 million, they're not going to be the ones that buy it, but there's going to be an intermediary guy that's going to, or company that's going to buy into and manage your business compared to 10 with other 10 other ones to make sure they're all running on the same, and then move them up to the next roll up and sell them again. We're on the target for that. That's what they want. Tree companies and us. So if you look at the broad spectrum of retirement and investment, because a business should be an investment. Everyone starts a business and they think, oh yeah, we're gonna pass it on to our kids. And I've seen this happen so many times in 40 years that the kids don't wanna take it. They don't.
Yeah.
And if you don't prepare your business to be sold, whether you just close it down or not, you're doing yourself a major disservice.
Yeah.
So having it ready to be sold at a targeted time, it doesn't mean it has to be ready at every time, but you should have stepping stones and increments of where you are that, okay, I'm at this plateau to be sold, and then I'm at this plateau to be sold. I think that's very important, and it's very easy to do in our service-based industry, almost like HVAC can be done, plumbing, electrical. But when you go out and mowing, there's no loyalty to it. When you go out and hardscape and design build, once you sell Mrs. Smith that project, she's not going to see you again. You're done with her. So you have to constantly be rolling that stone looking for more work, where you're going to go see Mrs. Jones 6 times a year. And if you find something that she needs, not a disservice, you're going to see her 7 times. And Mrs. Jones is going to see you again next year because Chris did a great job.
Yeah.
That makes business a little bit easier. I did it long enough where selling for tomorrow was very, very difficult. You know, your renewals are gone out. You do yours early. Mine are out. You kind of know going into the following year after winter time that you're going to start up and you're going to go to work.
Well, it's cool because I have data now. Mm-hmm. I think I said that on our last podcast. It's cool going into a year where I have data. So I know the cancel rate. I know how many prepays we should have gotten in, how many we've gotten in.
I'm just laughing because I literally just went through that last night before I wrapped all this stuff to come down here.
It's so nice. It's so nice. And like, and it's funny. Don't get me wrong. Business is stressful. I'm not trying to make.
Hell yes.
When we're end of November, I think we sent ours out. When did we send ours out? We sent ours out in December, early December. So end of November, the bank accounts are getting lower than anyone likes them to be, right? And I'm taking this massive risk. I have all these monthly bills that are coming in. They're not going to stop. And if no one responds, like that's what I mean. Like I was sitting on the highway. What if no one responded to that? Like, and I know that's not how it's going to happen. But as a business, a small business owner, those are the thoughts that go through my head. Like, what if only 1% prepay? I'll make it. I'll probably make it. Don't get me wrong. I don't think I'm that
tight,
but it still would be stressful through January and February, right? But then I knew, then I would rest assured. I look back, I was like, all right. Then we send another one out January 15th, then another one out February 15th, and then another one out March 15th. Like, I really, and then we will have 30, 40% of our customers prepay.
So now, and I don't want the number because we don't want to talk about that on air, but do you keep your prepay discount the same for each mailing that goes out? I know companies, I've worked with them where, let's say their first one's 10%, and then it goes to 7%, and then it goes to 5%, and then it goes to 3%.
I'll be honest with you. I don't have a lot of customers that listen to this, so it really doesn't matter if they did.
Nah.
Hello, welcome to the podcast. But we really just offer it until we do your first application.
Like, but your percentage rate doesn't change?
No, 6%.
Got it.
All year, all time.
That's what I do.
So if someone calls me in July and wants to sign up for our last 4 bug applications and goes online and prepays, they get 6% off because I don't have to touch it. I don't have to worry about it. And I know people say, what about credit card fees? They're already building in my price. So
thank you. Yeah. That's a great answer. I mean, I think they need to be. Everyone is going to that electronic way. And, you know, perfect example is in Connecticut, if you go and pay anything, even on like your state funds or whatever it is, Secretary of State, yada, yada, credit card fee. You know, it's crazy. It they're there. So if it's baked into the price, as it's cost of business, it has to be. And everyone says, oh, it's a write-off. Well, I tell you what, a write-off is not 100% direct write-off. It's a percentage of a write-off.
Yeah.
I'd rather take that money in my pocket and pay the capital gains or whatever persuasion of tax law we can use to reduce that and walk away with that money than have a write-off.
That's exactly to my point. Business gets harder. I have to talk about all this stuff now. Like, you know, we made a profit this year. What do we do with
awesome.
It? First of all, where'd it all go? Because it's not in my bank account, most of it. I thought I made. They said X amount of dollars. That's not what it's in the bank account, sir.
See,
tax guy.
I have my closing on Monday, and we talked before on air. There's a discrepancy with what our bookkeeper has, which is Megan and Joey Coberly. the landscape and bookkeeper, and their numbers are dead on. I know there are.
Yeah.
Compared to what my CRM system is doing. And it's most likely operator error on my part of input.
Input.
And I'll go through this weekend. What are you going to do this weekend? Well, I'm going to comb through my books. Isn't that exciting? I'm a business owner. Woo. Yeah. Why don't you go here? Why don't you go there? Because those things are going to be in the back of my head, because if they don't equal and balance, why they call it a balance sheet, there's a problem somewhere. And, and you just brought that up by saying, oh, there's not as much as I thought. And
well, it's
that's what happened to me. I'm like, wait a minute. I thought I was going to hit this monumental number and I would be just shy of it. And then I see what Megan has reported through QuickBooks. I'm like, ooh.
Then you talk to your tax people and they say, buy a Stinger aerator.
So that's
what we did.
Yep.
You know, and you depreciate it so that's what I'm learning. You know, as much as Andrew taught me at Go Green, which immensely about business, I'm learning all the things that you need to do as you grow. Where can we put our money in, and just be prepared for if you do an owner distribution, because I have a partner, Steve, yep, that this. You're paying this much, but you're losing. They're going to pull that money out too. So the government's going to get their money. It doesn't matter either way. It's just now you need to understand that my bonus at the end of the year is not actually my bonus. You know.
So do you want to talk more finance?
I mean, listen, I don't want to get even on this podcast. I don't want to get somewhere where I sound uneducated, because I don't know enough. This would be a question for Steve and for. And like Steve knows this stuff, and our accountants, like, I kind of, that's where I draw, not I draw a line, but that's where I don't want to take it, because I don't know enough about it.
And
right.
Like, so you have partners for that. Mm-hmm, and I do as well. So that I think is where we're getting to, whether you're in business for yourself, is you need to know your limits and you need to ask for help. And having, like I said, I have the landscape and bookkeeper, and then I also, who they pair with is Sheila, Reliable Tax Solutions. They're my board. They're, you know, when I was at Russo, when I was at Brightview, you had a CFO, yep, you had a controller, you had this and that, and you could go and kind of rummage through things. Well, speaking with both of the landscaper, bookkeeper, and Sheila, I had a plan this year of that truck that I drove in here. I needed to replace a truck, so we had the plan laid out of how I was going to get to that. I needed to replace one of my steel greens, so that plan was in place. But if it's just you or your people within this brick building doing the applications, talking about it, you don't have a solid plan, because what you're thinking and saying, you just think is right. You know, oh, yeah, this is what I'm doing. Yep, yeah, this is the right way to do it. But then you use a sounding board of other people, like your business partner and your accountant, and they look at, wait a minute, hang on. Maybe if we do it this way, and legally, we should do it this way for this benefit. You're like, oh, because I don't know 300 new tax codes that come in every year. And you can't stay on top of it. That's why it was hard when I first started to take on the payment of having a bookkeeper monthly and having Sheila quarterly and all that stuff. It's expensive, but it's an investment that I would not trade.
Yeah,
I'd pay that money. And I tell Megan all the time, her rates are going to go up. I'm like, yeah, as they should.
Yeah.
You know, it's well worth it.
And our biggest sticking point with Steve this year was, we have a budget and we're sticking to it.
And that's hard.
And if we have to, it is, because little Johnny's soccer tournament comes up and it's $250 and you've maxed your sponsorship budget out. Yeah. But he's like, you know, Steve's smart. He's like, we'll go through it. We'll figure it out. You know, if we got to pull something from something else. But it's just what I'm saying is that now that we're at the size we're at, that's a very real concern now, is where the budget is going. Because we're going from spending 5% on X amount of dollars to spending 5% on this much money. It's a ton more risk and loss, you know. And it's tough because me and Steve are very yin and yang. He's very business. He looks at the numbers. He's like, if we're not getting a return on this sponsorship, we're not going to do it next year. And I say, we're going to do it next year because we're invested in the community.
Correct.
Right? So there's a definite balance that is taking place between me and Steve right now. And, you know, people say don't get in business with your friends, but me and Steve have known each other 30-plus years. We haven't had one hiccup yet. So
Maybe we will, maybe we won't.
We'll see how it goes. But he's a very good yin to my yang, and he'll keep me grounded, but I'll also push him a little bit and say, yeah, Steve, but our mission statement is to be in the community at all times, be visible, be present. Like, that's our, and if we don't want to sponsor, you know, a cleanup day or something like that, then that's kind of, that's our mission.
Right.
So we need to allocate those funds to our mission also, because that's almost our brand. You know, where do you put that sponsorship? Is that part of your sponsorship budget money, or is that now your branding money? Because it's really just, you're not really getting direct lead sales out of it, but it's part of your brand.
100%. It's that visual contact of seeing you, and then next thing you know, 2 weeks later, someone has a tick on them in their property. Like, oh, wait a minute. These guys were just down doing cleanup day. Yep, I'm going to reach out to them, see if they can help me. And that does work. I think it compiles each year even more and more without people even knowing it. Back to the budget deals, that's something that Russo, that helped me a ton, and you're running into that now, which is cool, is we would comb through that budget sometimes twice a quarter to see where we were. But then, like you said, oh man, the Enterprise Car Rental, which was a great customer of ours, that come hit us up for their $1,500 golf sponsorship, and we've already spent money here. And it was more of just a cat and mouse game of where we can pull from. Where did we save? Oh, garbage disposal this month was down. We can slide 200 that way.
Well, that makes me feel a lot better then.
Oh, 100%.
That it is that it should be that fluid, I guess.
100%. Because you have your bottom number already created for your budget.
Oh, yeah. I got that number solid.
So then it becomes a game, and then the game becomes fun of where you can save on the other ends.
And get customers.
But yeah. But what you're saving is less brake jobs. Where you're saving
100%.
Is, you know, this, that. It's not taking away from advertising, yeah. But where you can save, two things can happen. One, it can go fill that pocket that was low, maybe in advertising, or you need a new motor for something.
My pocket.
Or it's going to go right to the bottom line. It can go nowhere else. When your budget is created, yeah. And any one of those lines is in the green compared to the red, it can go nowhere but into your pocket.
Yeah.
Black is neutral. Red is backwards. Yeah. Green is
profit.
Stay
in your lane.
Yep. And that's the fun part of budgets, and you know that's getting way into the weeds, but that's what it needs. That's how complicated business gets when you get bigger and bigger.
And we're getting into that, you know, and I knew that coming in. I'm not saying I wasn't surprised by it, but it's just when it does happen, it's a different feeling of walking into this warehouse / office. Like, I look in here, I'm like, man, maybe I actually should put a wall up with a door, you know?
You feel different.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, you walk in here now and there's a different, you have a different set of eyes on now.
Yeah.
It's growth on your part, which is cool.
Yeah. It was fun. It was fun. And it's going to be fun. I think this year is going to be interesting because we're doing the Stout Lawn and Pest. We've just changed the name from Stout Lawn Care to Stout Lawn and Pest. We're going to do some indoor pest control.
Oh, really?
Not as aggressively as I think, you know, for everyone listening out there, we're not going to do rodent control. I don't think we're really going to mess with termites. I don't think we're really going to mess with bed bugs. So I think those are really like wildlife. I'm sorry, rodents is the wrong word. Wildlife. We are going to do bait stations.
Got it.
Cockroaches, if it's really bad, we're going to assess the situation and say that's just not our forte.
So this should be all your experience from the restaurant world.
Correct.
I mean, you dealt with that daily, weekly, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The guys are in there every day putting bait stations out.
And you see that recurring revenue.
I see it as a monthly installment. I see my competition around with pest control, and I see that I can self-educate me and maybe one technician on how to do it, why to do it, where to do it. It's safe for everybody, and it's not that hard of an application to make in the long run. And we're really just doing a perimeter pest spray. I've been doing those since I was working for Scott's Lawn Care.
Right.
So
we used to call them PPCs.
I think it's really about educating the customer and say, listen, we don't really need to be a baseboard jockey and come in your house and spray your baseboards down. It's just not necessary. How bad is your insect problem?
Let's keep them from coming in.
Let's just keep them from coming in.
Yeah.
And that's your insect or rodent problem. That's all we're going to do. And I don't think we're going to overextend ourselves. There's better people out there that are locally owned that we will recommend for all those services.
Yep.
But if you want to stick with Stout Lawn Care, have the same bill as you do for your national chain pest control company, then we can do the same service for you.
Yep, I think it's great. And I think that's another reason just why this type of landscaping services is so feasible to grow for many different people, because the constant add-ons that you can do with education. You know, you can get into mosquito, in Connecticut, you need a different license for a mosquito. You can't do any arboriculture above 3 feet, yada, yada, yada. Another license there. Your 3A is your turf and ornamental. Right away is along highways and all that stuff.
Yep.
As you get, let's say, I hate to use the word bored, or the honeymoon's over, that carrot allows you to move back into that motivation that you have to move the next thing.
Is that I didn't change my program really at all from last year to this year because I don't think there's a need to. And maybe I was just, maybe me and Steve were sitting around like, hey, let's just do pests because Chris needs to learn, take another PA category test that I always fail the first time, no matter how hard I'm. I'll be honest as all.
I hate tests. I stink at taking them.
I always fail them the first time. I always do. Mm-hmm. I always do. I have to like read the questions first and see where the test is going, right, and then study again. And usually second, maybe third time I get it.
Is yours online?
No, you got to go to a 4-H center, they call them.
So Connecticut, I guess, and thank God I haven't got to find some wood to knock on here other than my head, but they've changed from the paper to the online, and I was at one of the seminars, and a couple guys had to renew their license because they let it lapse or whatever, and they're like, we can't pass that test. It's crazy because it's from a college now. It's not a Connecticut-based one. It's a uniform one, whatever, and they say it's very, very difficult for your main 3A body. And then, you know, you have your add-ons from there, and I don't do mosquito. I don't have the time. I really don't.
Yeah.
I recommend them to a customer or to a couple companies in our area. They do a great job. It takes tick away from me because if they're getting mosquito, they really don't need me for tick control. They're doing a great job with it. I see that. I also see that if I wanted to grow this in another direction, the easiest thing to do is to add that service on, not take another customer on, but my base that I have, I could take even just 10% of them, it's great.
PA Ag has the same concept, different categories. And
got it.
It'll have different for everything. And it's funny because even when I took it, went up for Scott's, I can't remember the dates, but it was long, 16 years ago, 15 years ago. I don't know, however long ago. It couldn't have been that long. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So
they all blend together.
Yeah, they all blend together. But when I first started taking the test, a lot of the categories, and even I think the core was open book at the time.
Really?
It was a lot easier to get your categories. Now it's all closed book. But it's some of them are pretty easy. The vertebrate that I'm taking right now is not easy. Mm-hmm. It's just a difficult test.
Well, I think it's because of where those pests are going to be and where you're going to be applying.
Yeah.
They have to be.
Yeah.
You know, I remember taking mine. It was through UConn. It was actually at one of their. It was always at one of their branches. And you know, the UConn students that were in the Hort and getting their license, whatever, they would come in to take the test at the same time. It was a 3-hour written test. You had 3 hours. It's that long. And they tell you if you don't pass the safety, the rest of the part doesn't matter. If you don't pass the math, the rest of the part doesn't matter. You need to score equally or pass each one of them, and then we'll blend the scores together. But I remember a lot of the UConn students coming in and putting the pencils down on the math part of it. I mean, it was cool. It was like, it was hard taking dry weight measure ounces into liquid formulations and then doing ratios from there. I don't know if I could get through it again.
Yeah.
I really don't. I mean, yeah. I was smoking.
It's like a citizenship test.
It's That's not funny because you're right. I watch them on social media. I'm like, shit, I didn't know the answer. They got me. I'm like,
absolutely.
Damn it.
Yep.
Damn it. See? So our CFO at Russo was from Poland. And she moved over here and she had to take the test. And she studied her tail off. I mean, she's a smart, smart girl. Great with numbers. And the test was not a joke. And she not happy with what's
going on.
Well,
back in the restaurant days, we had Don, his name was Don Ho. And he used to bring in all his friends to help us dishwash and prep. And I mean, I knew him for, I don't know, maybe 4 years, 5 years. And the last couple of years, he took that test and he would bring it in and be studying while he was making salsa or doing dishes or whatever he was doing. And I'll tell you what, none of us in that restaurant could have passed the test.
And the crazy thing about it is the people that take that test, they're so friggin' proud of what they accomplished. And we've made it nothing now.
Nothing.
It really hurts me because I worked with the same type of people in Russo. They were amazing people. Mike helped guys that got their citizenship, get their driver's license,
yeah,
get apartments, have families, you help them grow all this stuff, and they did it the hard, correct way.
I Johnny Camacho, he lives in Costa Rica. I worked with him as a line cook. I mean, this guy was the greatest, one of the greatest people I've ever met. And what did he do? He came here for 5 years. Yes, he sent some money back to his family, but what did he do with that money? He bought a 13-acre coffee farm, and that's where he lives now.
When are you going to visit
him? Isn't that the American dream? Exactly. Like, people say that that's so bad that he did that, but you know what he did? You know what Johnny did? He worked side by side with me and worked 13-hour shifts for $12 an hour.
Hello, this is Brian and Stephanie, owners of Tick and Skeeter Deleter. Are you providing a tick and mosquito control service?
We formulated a product to target today's environmentally conscious market.
Tick and Skeeter Deleter is your ultimate 25B exempt pesticide.
This product controls on contact while acting as a repellent.
With these all-natural essential oils, you will leave behind an aroma even the neighbors will enjoy.
Elevate your business with Tick and Skeeter Deleter.
Use discount code ROOTZONE for a 5% discount on product at yardcomfort.com. Thank you for listening to the Root Zone podcast.
So, Tour from Nutrition podcast. Let's get into this real quick.
Okay.
Was this just, I know Doug Gray, you guys were sitting around talking one day, and how did you come up with the way of the turf nutrition side? Like, where were you going with that? Like, where did it come about?
Good story. So I, through my journey, I also was a partner in a CrossFit gym.
Oh, I do CrossFit. Oh, that's funny.
Yep.
I do sweat. I don't do CrossFit. Okay. I like to keep tone, Kevin.
Any movement's good movement.
Yeah, especially really when it's, what do they call that? When it's motion active or motion movements, like to keep you more flexible in your life and as you get older. Like, I don't know.
If you really think about health, aging and dying is the absence of oxygen. Most people that die, they die of issues because of, what is it, pneumonia, all these things that, because you're not taking in as much oxygen as you should. So back to the original part, I jumped into CrossFit needing to do something. And it was back when I was at Russo. And Mike's appreciation to me, he bought me a membership. And there was one literally from here out to your road from our building, which is great.
Yeah.
Super intimidated. The name of it was scary, army guys, all this stuff. Well, I started, believe it or not, with my wife. She was going to a lady at her school that was doing after-hour classes. And then when school was out, Laura brought it into the parks, and anyone could go. Well, I was the only guy there. And I always thought I was in shape till you met Laura. And she can make you look stupid really fast. Mm-hmm. So it was all bodyweight movement stuff, and it was great. Flexibility, she's a great yoga, Pilates teacher, yada, yada. She's like, okay, well, it's raining. I got us into the CrossFit gym. We can use their space, and one of the coaches is going to be there. Sweet. So the wife and I went and tried it. I fell in love with it. We had my whole family go there. This was in May, and did the Murphy Wad, the Michael Murphy Wad, which is a memorial on Murphy Day every day. It was a wad that he did in preparation to keep himself in shape out in the desert. It's run 1 mile. You do, let's see if I remember right, it's 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, 300 air squats, run another mile. Mm-hmm. Loaded with a loaded vest. That was what they did every day. And sometimes he did it twice a day. Amazing what those soldiers are done. So anyway, we did the first time, and you're using bands for pull-ups. Your push-ups suck, your air squats, and you're not running anything loaded. But the adrenaline, it got my adrenaline. So then we just got into it. So then I was coaching soccer for my kids and brought in the lacrosse team. And Dave, the owner, brought them in and did kids programs with them. And it was really cool. Ended up falling in love. Head over heels. Next thing you know, I get so involved with it that the gym itself had to move the location it was. One, landlord issues, and two, needed a bigger space. I found the space in my town, helped build it, paint it, move everything in, used all of Russo's equipment to move all the equipment over there, yada, yada, yada. In gratitude for all the work I was doing, and really became kind of more the focal point of the business, the face of the business. Because Dave was 100% active military, and the other partners, Dave, was active military, and I was able to have this flexibility coming in and out. They offered me a percentage of ownership for all this. So it was cool. So I was involved in it. Well, my kids get big involved in it. my daughter and son have competed in Miami and across the country. My son just got back from Charleston down to doing a couples competition that he just won. Be that as it may, studying nutrition and getting a certificate in that and doing meal preparation for people, the light bulb went off. Our macros that we use and we eat is no different than a plant. So we have our fats, carbohydrates, and proteins. Those are our macros. And then in our lawn care, when our three numbers on a bag or a bottle, you know, we have our NPK. Those are macros. But then from those macros, we can get our micros. And you can get your macros from McDonald's and get very little micros. And same with lawn care, you can get your macros from this with very little micros. But it's the micros that we need in our bodies to keep our going. And that's where the nutrition part in working on the soils, that it all just came together. And then in 2018, I've been turf nutrition ever since.
Yeah.
It's more of feeding a living organism, and not saying that I'm doing it better than anyone else. I just mentally changed my approach to it and how I present it to my clients. And it works very well for me in my area.
Yeah.
It's nutrition that we're feeding a wonderful living organism, living in an amazing ecosystem that is actually giving more back to us than we're giving to them.
Yeah.
You know, the amount of oxygen that an 8,000 square foot lawn produces is amazing. It's enough for like five families. It's the water retention, the solar reduction of heat, all that crazy stuff. It's pretty cool what we're providing. Sure, we're making lush green lawns and people kind of hold a little negative attitude towards that, but we're actually doing more for cleaner air, cleaner water, filtration, if it's done right in our services.
That's the key right there, if it's done right. Mm-hmm. And two podcasts ago, we had Kara and Greg on, and they run a bee farm. And it was really cool to have them on because it just kind of shed the light on, like, you can get your organic produce from Giant, but you're still getting it from, like, a mass producer of organic produce, right? The thought process is they didn't really know about lawn care, right? And they didn't know how I did it and how I perceive, like you said, it's more of a nutrition plan. I'm trying to work with the environment to make the grass healthier. And Greg used to refer to it as a green desert. That was like, oh, there's no real life there. And it was a good discussion back and forth saying, hey, but yes and no, we can have a delicate balance of both if it's done right. If I'm not killing the waterways, if this plant is absorbing these macros and micros that I'm putting in, then it's a beneficial for the ecosystem and everybody with the advantages you already said.
And I agree 100% if it's done right. You know, I think there was a lot of bad reputation from some of the national chains that were going out there and getting on the news and having some runoffs and this and that, but that doesn't help you and your business providing a service such as that. You know, it's not going to help your business grow. And I think the beef is a perfect example. I mean, you can go to a feedlot and you can go to where they're going to get an animal that typically should be grown in 18 months, get it down to 8 to 10 months, and they're going to feed it an antibiotic every single day because it's not out on fresh grass eating, that it's refertilizing and creating an ecosystem. Well, we're working on that same ecosystem in our lawns. We really are. And can you harm that ecosystem by doing wrong things? Sure, but we're no different. We're going to eat healthy if we like to, but most of the time you're putting your good food into it. But we're going to need medicine from time to time. No different than your lawn's going to need medicine from time to time. So we're that management company that keeps it as healthy as possible, tries to give it exercise, drink 80 ounces a day, do this and that, like we are for a human body. But then, you know, when something goes awry, we can, maybe you do need to go see a doctor. Maybe you need to go see this guy or whatever. And we're the person that can just see it and take care of it at the time instead of going out and just treating to treat because.
Yeah, maybe we do need to rehab your lawn.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I don't like the word organic because anything organic is just tied to money. To be licensed and certified organic, the amount of money you need to pay in the government, let's say as an organic farm, and it's crazy, but my big word is sustainable. It really, to be as healthy as we can in the environment with our lawns. Am I a tree hugger? No. Do I understand that we need certain products out there that do kill things? We do need to do that. You know, we have to do that in any of our environments. I think there was, just saw a thing on a country where they ban all glyphosate. I think it's England. And they just came back crawling on their hands and knees to put it back on. Because the invasion of all these species that are coming in from birds, from stuff being brought over from other countries and all stuff that are growing through their roadways and all this, that they cannot control. They can't. The do-gooders think they can, but they finally proved to science that if it's used properly, it doesn't harm anything. The science is there. But when you have a gigantic company, Monsanto, that makes a product with tons and tons of money, there's these guys that have billboards and they chase ambulances and they find out that, man, if we get our claws into one or two of them, we can make this really cool and very financial stable on the lawsuit part of it. The science is proven that glyphosate is not nearly as dangerous as people make it out to be. It doesn't transfer, and a perfect example is take a pump sprayer, go out in your yard, write your name on glyphosate. The next day, water it. Water the piss out of it. 2 weeks, I guarantee your name didn't run. Your name, Chris, is going to be in that lawn, and it's not going to be smudged anywhere. Yeah. Once it's in the plant, it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't transpire anywhere else. So we have more negative news out there in anything we do, not just our business, but negativity sells. So once it gets into lawn care, once it gets in the tree, once it gets in the beef, whatever, you know, it's easy to sell.
You know, it's funny you said that. It just made me think of something. Our best video on TikTok is us spraying our mosquito control out of a mist blower. And you know why? Because we got 150 negative comments.
Really?
That stuff doesn't work. Where's your mask? You're going to die soon anyway. You are an idiot. Like all this stuff.
All things could be true. Hey. I am an idiot. I'm going to die soon. Who knows? Yeah, but
you know, but I know what I'm doing, so it didn't bother me. But right. It's funny that was our, by far, our biggest
interesting
comments were stuff like that.
Do you do a lot on TikTok?
Yeah, we do. We do a lot of our videos on TikTok because their platform is easy to make videos and they kind of auto edit. I guess, you know, I say that, but we're 3 months behind. We slow down on making reels during our off season. So in about 2 weeks,
it's hard when you're in a, you know, whoever's listening to this, if you're in a seasonal business as we are, you could be down south where you're booming and that's easy. It's hard to come up with content that is going to be relevant that someone's going to want to look at. You know, you can throw shit out there to throw it out there.
Yeah, but we did.
There's no need for that.
There's no need, and we don't. Steve, we rest during these 3 months, so I don't need the pressure on him to come up with content every day. He's going to have enough content in 2 weeks. You know, we did the filming today, so we got a lot of content today. We're going to do training week in a week and a half from now. We got a lot of content, and then once training week hits, we're
you go. It's go time.
We're go. We can get all the visuals, all the visuals and videos.
You know, it's funny you say that. Like, you take the time right now to rest. And we're a service-based industry, and you know, we in this space work hard from middle of March until Christmas. We do. We bust our stones. But you think about an HVAC guy or a plumber, they kind of have that all the time. They don't get that little time of reprieve. You know, you absolutely either go from my AC's not working, we got to go, or to my heat's not working. They go from one extreme to the other, and they just don't get that time to decompress like we do.
No, we're fortunate.
We are. I think that it is a good thing.
Not half the reasons. One of the reasons why I chose this profession also is because I enjoyed this downtime. First of all, seasonal depression. It's cold. It's dark. I don't like waking up real early in the morning when it's like that.
It's hard.
This time of year, it's nice. I get to sleep in. I get to see my kids off to school. I get them on the bus. I can help my. This is a really busy time for my wife. You know, these last 2 months are busy in sales for health insurance, so she's super busy, and I can pick up the kids. I can be very flexible. That's, you know, choosing Stout Lawn and Pest was the flexibility of my schedule, and just being able to not miss my son's games, my daughter's recitals, you know.
That
growing up single parent, single mother.
The most important thing ever. I never missed, proud to say I've never missed one thing that my kids have done.
And that's
it's so important.
And that's, you talk about what's important in money. That right there, not missing my son's games or my daughter's recitals is more important than any paycheck anyone can ever get.
100%. And it goes so fast. How old are your kids?
4 and 6.
Oh, shit. It'll be a blink of an eye. I mean, my twin boys are 26 and my daughter's 22. All of them heavily active in sports. All of them, actually, The first thing that we've ever missed sports-wise was a couple weeks ago when my son went down to Charleston to do the CrossFit competition. We went the year before. I couldn't go because of my hip surgery. I wasn't cleared to fly yet, or we would have gone to see that. I mean, what else is there to do in life? I mean,
absolutely.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
And it sucked that we missed that one.
It's what I most look forward to, and that's why I'm here. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And it's nice because I think I was on the Green Grind podcast with Corey Ballard, and they're on the grind. The mowing doesn't stop during the season. Rain doesn't stop. But you know what? Fertilizer stops. I can stop it for a day and a half and catch back up the next week, and it's a beautiful thing. And I value – that's going to be as we grow, giving up scheduling is going to be really hard for me because I schedule in favor of the employee or me 90% of the time.
Yep.
Because I can fake the funk. If that makes sense, I can make a customer feel really happy and really satisfied by the level of service if we just communicate well and say, hey, we'll be out on Monday. Is that all right if we're out on Monday? Grady has or Eric or Steve has a concert he's going to on Friday.
When you were on our podcast, I think that's one of the things that you spoke about that resonated the most of working with your team. That is so important that your team members understand that they have the flexibility and they don't take advantage of it because it's there for them. And I think as a leader and a manager, that's important. That's something that I did at Russo, and I believe I earned a lot of respect from the people because I didn't want to miss my kids' stuff either.
Yeah.
And if it was important to them, they needed to be there. And we'll figure this out.
We'll figure
it
out.
You need to go do this.
We'll figure it out.
And when you let them, it's not let, I even hate that.
Yeah.
When you give them the option to go to their son's baseball game or recital or parent-teacher conference, they come back with a whole new attitude.
Yeah.
They're like, dude, this guy's got my back.
Yeah.
This is cool.
And it's, probably the businessman in me is going to regret saying this 5 years from now, but even like vacation time, we talk about unlimited vacation. And I was just talking to Steve about it. I was like, 14 days for ex employee, right? They have 14 days, 2 weeks paid vacation, or 10 days, we'll call it, whatever. Yeah. 2 weeks paid vacation, great. Take them anytime during the year. Doesn't matter. Take it. I highly recommend that you don't take it in September, October, or March and April. But we'll work around it if you do.
Yeah.
If you have a football game and the Steelers play, Steelers played somebody and it was the middle of October. And he's like, I really want to go out Friday and come back Monday. Can I do it? I'm like, of course you can.
Right.
We'll bust our humps Wednesday and Thursday. You'll stick around till 5:30, 6 o'clock, and we'll get a bunch more done. And you can have a whole Friday and Monday, no big deal.
And when there's that buy-in, they have the same buy-in to produce as well.
But I don't want to take that Friday or that Monday off for his vacation time, right? I look at vacation time as I need to take a Monday through Friday off because
I'm recharging.
I'm going to North Carolina to golf, or I'm going with my family to the beach. Cool. But if Eric comes up to me and says, hey, I want to take off Friday. He's a salaried employee. Hey, I want to take off Friday. Can I take a day? Yes, you can take a day. And I'm not taking that off of your vacation time. Like, I'm not saying you have to come back one day early from your family vacation and be here on a Friday. I'm just going to give you that day. Just give me the hour somewhere the week before or the week after. And that's fine with me.
Which, again,
even my hourly guys
in this business can be done very easily.
Yeah.
If you're doing hardscaping, no.
No.
If you're doing mowing, that's sometimes hard to do just because maybe the lawn isn't needed to be mowed. And you're going to try to do it ahead of time. And then Mrs. Jones is like, man, you were just here 3 days ago. What's going on with that? Another great thing about this, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, that you have that flexibility window of returning in 5 weeks roughly. So you can kind of fudge it one way or the other.
35, 45 days. That's what we say.
And this year with all the rain we had, we kind of had to use sometimes the 45s. It's funny, Matt, we talk about this all the time. There's not too many days we do not go out in the rain. And this past year with not so much the amount in duration, but the amount in a short period of time, like we were going, it was like an inch and a half in a day. You couldn't do anything. You look like a fool.
It was a weird year.
I think we ended up with 55 inches in Connecticut. July was just shy of 19 inches. August was just shy of 17 inches. September wasn't much better, but at least we got some seeding season in, which was good. It was by far the most difficult year I've ever had in this business in 30-something years. It was all weather. It was just Mother Nature.
We had that dry spell in the beginning. We got enough rain in July and August to get us through for a little bit. And then September hit, and it was on and off. And I was talking to somebody, and I said, we only missed 3 days for aeration seeding season in 2 months.
And you weather. Do. You, I remember when we talked on the podcast, you would do a ton of them. You had it scheduled out.
Yeah, we'll do it. We did 146 this year. We'll do well over 200 next year. I got another stinger, so we better do well.
So you have two now?
Yeah, we have two.
Is it here already?
One's at another guy's shop.
Got it.
He does a late season seeding for a soccer field.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, after everything's done, they go out and seed it for him.
So I have a stinger. I also have a Z plugger that.
Oh, the old Z plugger.
Oh, man, they're so slow. When you get a stinger, they're so slow, lifting and turning. But I also have the overseeder attachment for it, which doesn't do overseeding.
Yeah.
But I have a bunch of landscapers that I work for that do hardscape, so I'll come in and do their seeding and topsoil, and that's what I use. I use that in two direction, garden weasel around everything. It comes in like a carpet.
Yeah.
But Matt runs two machines, and he ran two this year. He's like, oh, my gosh, night and day. So nice.
Well, I realized at the end of the year we were pushing, going to the working guys too hard. We were pushed. We had to get this much done. It was towards the end of the year. I'd rather go into next year knowing I can run a two-man crew for maybe 3-4 weeks. First 2 weeks, 3 weeks, training, get your foot on the ground, still dry in September.
Yep.
Nail it down, two crews out every day with a walk behind and a stinger, and then the last 2 weeks just clean up everything. And so that's my goal this year.
And it goes back to the reason of why, like another reason why I was into this, when I said that you can come into this work and go home kind of refreshed, and you're going to do that same thing with these guys. They went out last year and they busted hump. And now you need to relieve that stress and pressure from them a little bit so that they don't hate the seeding process.
And you don't want to disappoint customers either, because you start pushing off some pretty good customers for a late October, early November seeding. No one's, I'm not happy about that.
Yeah, they're hoping on a good winter and a great spring.
Exactly. Exactly.
And we all know it's going to do okay, but again, when it comes to that point, you're almost, the customer's looking at you through some different.
But I always tell Steve, I said, somebody's got to be last.
This is true.
Somebody's got to be last. Somebody's got to be last. And that's, I tell Steve, this customer really wants us to get done by October 13th. I'm like, I can get him done on the 17th. They're like, I said, somebody's got to be last. And you got to trust the process. And it's tough. It's tough at the end of the year.
That's what I say about doctors. You have your doctor that finishes first in the class and last in the class, and they all end up with that same damn license.
D's get degrees.
It's crazy.
D's get degrees.
I've been lucky. I've had good doctors, so can't complain.
That is good. That is the next step on my health. Speaking of health journey, is as I'm 42 now, so starting to really look at my health. And I joined a CrossFit gym, and I do the sweat,
nice.
2-3 times a week. And it's funny you say correlating it back, but it's when I went in there, me and my wife went in there very skeptical. Bears Den Fitness, Jeff Schantz, great guy, does awesome for the community up one of the communities up around here, Boyertown. But going in there, we were very skeptical. Like, I'm not a gym person per se, and when I say that, I can't go into LA Fitness or what Crunch or whatever and just work out myself. Like, I'm not regimented like that. I'm a sports guy. I like people telling me how to do it, when to do it, what am I doing wrong? Bust your ass. But when I got into this gym, I felt my inner athlete come out again. And it was like,
it's a drug.
It's a good feeling, without a doubt. And I hate going. Don't get me wrong. There's days almost every time I'm like, dragging myself there. But when I leave there, it's like, oh, that felt great.
So you do sweat. Do you know if this gym, if they program themselves, or are they using an outsourced programming? By the word of sweat, they could be doing Hard Work Pays Off, which is Matt Fraser's programming, because they have a sweat division of that comes with their programming.
I'm not sure. Jeff puts the programs together himself.
Okay, so he's doing it himself.
Yeah, he'll say, today we're doing, burpees, or, we're doing this. Like, we did a rowing challenge, and so that's what I mean. My inner athlete comes out. We had to do 500 meters on the rower as fast as you possibly could do it.
What was your time?
First time I did it,
1:48.
1:36.
Decent time.
Thank you. I see. That's cool that you know this. Yes. And then the second time I just retested and I got a second off. I was at 1:35. So I'm improving. But the first time I did it, talk about inner athlete. I think I almost had an aneurysm.
Mm-hmm.
I really do, because I thought to myself, I saw people do it. I said, it's 2 minutes. It's 2 minutes. I can do anything for 2 minutes. I could do anything for 2 minutes. And I'll tell you what, Kevin, that last 30 meters, I don't even know how my legs and my brain were working simultaneously, because by the time I was done, I rolled off that whatever they call it. And
concept two rower is what it's called.
And I thought I was dead. Yeah. I thought my brain was exploding, first of all. I wanted to go to the emergency room because I had the worst headache I've ever had in my life. And since then, I've had a mild headache. And I've come to realize, I think it's just I have a little pulled neck, a little pulled muscle in like the top of my neck. And I think that's all it is. But leading to the health question, my wife goes, yeah, you're 42 now. You need to go get all this checked.
It's crazy. It compiles, but yeah.
But it was funny. It was a good feeling. And then I did it, and I improved a little bit. And I love it. I'm going to continue to do it. It's going to be weird because this is the first season I'm going into trying to balance work and doing sweat at the same time. Because off season, it's nice. I just go there for the midday class during lunch and go do my hour and come back to work. Well, I'm not going to have that luxury in about 3 weeks from now.
It's so addictive, and you know, the coaching back to the rower, which I loved. It's a sneaky device. It's wicked sneaky. People don't realize it. Like you said, they look at it like, oh shit, I can
do this for hours.
negatory. But when I was coaching and training athletes, our athletes were people like you and me, but there was also the competitive athletes that were there, and it was more what is more important as you get into this rowing is knowing your pace and where you can hold yourself so that you don't have what you just had. Those last 200 meters were killing me or whatever it was, 30 seconds. It's no different than in life when you train that stuff and you know where you can hold yourself sustainably and produce very, very well, or basically bring yourself up to the higher level. And then next thing you know, the stress comes in and you're getting sick and all that stuff. It all goes back to the same. It really, really does.
I like grass.
If you put it all into perspective, it's a gigantic circle. It's wild. It's really all the healthy things in life that you do all kind of are based off of the same foundation.
And this industry has made me a lot more conscious about the environment too, which is cool. And I think about a lot more things when I'm driving around. I see trash, or I see waterways, or I see farms, or I'm just noticing because I've, you know, documentaries, we talk about it.
True stewards. I mean, it's really just we become stewards of it, which is cool.
The corny commercial in Pennsylvania is, you know, or maybe it's nationwide, is one little thing every day. If everyone, I don't know, maybe it's Pennsylvania. It's like, I forget how it goes. Something like, I'll paraphrase, but if you do one little thing every day for the environment, it adds up. Because if everybody does one little thing, it adds up. And it's like so corny. It's like such a commercial. But it's at the same time, I do like find myself going through a day like, how can I be less impactful on the environment? If that makes sense.
And I think
when I go to a Wawa or a local convenience store and they say, "Do you want a plastic bag?" I say, "Nah, I don't need a plastic bag for the two things that I bought. I can carry them out."
It's funny. I stopped. I don't even know where I stopped. I stopped on the other side of that renewable energy source you have right out here. There's a gas station over there. And it's just weird. The coffee cups are styrofoam. And I just don't like that. And, yeah, it doesn't break down. I'm not earthy crunchy, but I'm like, there's no need for styrofoam, is there, really? So I'm like, shoot. Yeah. Damn styrofoam cup. But, yeah, as you get more and more into it, I think I agree with that. I think you look to try to just improve yourself and the people and the land around you just a little bit more.
And your kids.
100%. Yeah. You know, it's funny. My kids, my daughter is off the, I'm not going to say off the deep end, but she got us into naturopath medicine and doctor. And the doctor, she's amazing. And then you get into, like, what's in your laundry detergent? What's in here? And you really dig into it. I mean, there's a major brand of laundry detergent in this country that's in an orange jug that I'm not going to say the name, that's outlawed every other country but America. Mm-hmm. It's not allowed to be used because of what's in there. And it's crazy. We're poisoning ourselves. We really, really are. And
we don't think about those things as much as we should. And even, you know, it's tough, though. I'm not going to say it's easy. My kids still like Doritos, and it has red whatever.
You got to have them.
You know, like you everybody's got to have a Dorito.
It's
all balanced. It's hard to teach your kids that stuff, too. And I'm, you know, young parent here. I'm finding it very hard.
Social pressures they're under.
Well, one of my best friends has been in the culinary industry a long time. He's a chef. He's opened up a new restaurant. Shout out Steve Newman and Jerk Squad Restaurant. Down in Philly. It's going to be awesome. Can't wait to get to it. But he's been very adamant about that, raising his kids with a very healthy diet. Very, very, very healthy diet. And he wants to write a book called Kids Chicken Finger Kids that's just based on how we have been raised. Steve, same age as me, 40, that this, like, chicken finger French fry kids meal pizza thing has been around for a while, and it's just scary.
So do you know what that those meals are missing? And this goes back to a guy, Jamie Oliver. He was, you know that chef? Mm-mm. He was on TV.
I've heard the name.
Came from England.
Oh, yeah.
Like, cooking in his apartment, heavy English accent. Well, he came over to a small town in America to prove to them that he could cook good food for their kitchen in the high school. And what it all boiled down to was everything that was being produced in the schools did not need utensils. So when you eat food that doesn't need utensils, chicken fingers, pizza, hot dogs, all that stuff, there's no more utensils. And that's where our nutrition has gone away. There's no utensils. You're not having you can't have a nutritional meal that kids are going to eat if you don't have utensils.
Yeah,
I'm old enough where we would have to go through and actually had silver utensils, not plastic, where you had a knife, fork, get it from there.
Drop it, and then you had to drop it in the specific bucket when you...
And we were eating shit on the shingle still, but we had silverware to do it.
Texas,
you know?
Tommies with bacon and cheese on them. Oh, my God. It's just... And that's what Steve said. It's just... It's a shame that there is not a balance anymore. And there's a movement towards it, and I hope it gets bigger and
it's
brighter.
Big.
But it's tough for me... Even my daughter, my son, he's 6 now. He's grown out of it. Like, he'll almost try everything. He's very, but my daughter, it's tough. It's tough for me. Pasta or chicken fingers, man. So, pasta or chicken nuggets.
We've always cooked well for our kids and ate well. Sure, there's chicken nuggets, there's this and that, but we turned it around to grilled chicken. Caesar grilled, just do them in Caesar dressing. Grill them, skinless, boneless. All right, cool. That's good. Steak, do amazing steaks. And I've spoiled them with the cooking. And now, and they can all cook, too. But we were very regimented. We always had dinner together, too. Unless one was off at sports, it was very important we had dinner together. And we ate good foods. But it's hard in the general population when you have two working parents that aren't focused on that. They see what the TV commercials are producing for food, what they're getting at school. It's hard. It is. It's got to be hard as a younger parent with younger kids to fight that battle.
It's tough. You figure it out, though. Like I said, Jack's getting into it. And luckily, meeting my wife in the restaurant business and me having the restaurant experience, we had the advantage of knowing how to cook healthy for ourselves. And we usually eat a pretty square, round meal, as I would say. And we'll pass that on to Jack and Sammy for sure. But there's some people out there that really just don't know how to cook.
100%.
And that's scary to
me. Yeah, it is. And we just did it the other way. We just went and cooked them really good food that tastes good, and they get hooked on that. They're like, I'm not eating that. And they'll go out to a restaurant. They're like, nah, I'm okay. I'll have this instead, which is good. And kind of proud of that because they eat very good. They're all into meal prepping. They bring their meals. They're also all into nutrition and working out as well, so it's important for the right foods to feed the engine.
Yeah, and Kara, we had Kara Joe on, or Kara. I always say Kara Joe because that's the name of her skincare. But Kara does all her own skincare line and soaps and all that. And it's funny because when I run out of her soap, I told her the other day, I think it was on the podcast, I ran out and had to use this pink, like ivory, whatever it was, soap. And I was like, this stuff is terrible. Like, I feel like there's this weird film on me. And I was like, thank God
there
I
is.
Know Kara. Yeah, exactly. Thank God I know Kara, and I get my lemongrass soap back. And I had she moved 20 minutes from here. She used to live 45 minutes. And I don't get anything shipped, but I'll just drive down there and pick it up. And that 20-minute ride, it was so much easier to get my soap the other day. I was so excited.
So from what I'm hearing is you are changing subliminally to the more environmentally conscious
products
mindset.
Without at home.
Yeah, which
we
is
haven't,
cool.
We haven't used a surface cleaner in 5 years
my
now.
My wife's white vinegar and something that she
we
washes
use, you know, all our friends do this. It's called Thieves. Everyone knows the brand name. Young Living Oils Company, you know.
Yep.
There's a lot of them out there that are good. There's a lot of them that are phony. You just, same thing as long hair. Do your research. Know which ones are right. But we've always used, you know, oils or whatever for that aspect. And now that you're talking about my laundry soap, but I do love the smell of Gain detergent. I'm not going to lie to you. If I could look this up and Gain's on this list that you speak of, I'm going to be so upset.
I don't know if it is or not, but it's funny you say that because you'll be out service on a lawn and you'll drive around a house and the dryer's going full bore. Sometimes it's like, that smells good. Sometimes it's like, holy cow, that is like, damn, that's strong.
Yeah.
What are they doing?
Yeah, Kara even said that she took some of her products to like some people and they're like, oh, well, we need more fragrance.
Yeah.
She's like, nah.
It's funny. That's fragrant. What we use, no fragrance. My wife and daughter are into that. The natural soaps, the toothpaste is a tough one. That one, you know, they're all into the natural toothpaste. I'm like, dude, just give me some good old sweetener in that Crest and let's go.
Like, everything in moderation.
It is.
To wrap it up, Turf Nutrition Podcast.
Yeah, once you guys hear this on yours or mine or mine and Doug's, it'll be episode 50. Which is hard, but yeah, we've been talking and coming down here and doing this, which is great. Getting on your podcast, which is cool. I can't wait. We're gonna cross contaminate this. Basically, we're gonna collaborate between the two shows and try to get this out.
Emulsify it.
Oh, there you go. There you go again. Technically, yeah.
That's the culinary. Yeah, coming making dressings.
Yeah,
yeah. Thanks again, Root Zone Turf Nutrition Podcast. Coming together, talking
Stout
business.
Stout Lawn and Pest now,
Stout,
right?
Stout Lawn and Pest
new
now.
New name change.
DBA, doing business as.
Yep.
Couldn't change anything on the website because then we'd have to start over with reviews, and that wasn't going to happen.
No worries.
It's still stoutlawncare.com.
Perfect.
Listen, I really, if you guys have listened to the Root Zone and you've gotten to episode 8, thank you so much. If you're in the green industry and you're listening to this and you have not heard of the Turf Nutrition Podcast, it's a must listen. Kevin Salters, Doug Gray, they talk everything nutrition when it comes to lawn care programs, and they're fantastic at it. They're a resource for me for sure.
Thank you.
I appreciate the knowledge that you're dropping. I probably feel like I don't have to call you because you're just giving me the knowledge I'm looking for.
I am always available to you and to anyone out there. Honestly, I have no problems if someone wants to reach out with a question. I don't have all the answers, but we sure can get them for them.
And I never say this on the end of my podcast, but if anyone has any questions for me, I would love to answer them. I had one or two guys that I met down at Real Green, and I had a couple people reach out on Instagram with some questions.
Cool.
It was a good feeling. And if anyone wants to reach out to me, I'd love to talk and talk shop. And me and Kevin are on the same wavelength. We're not here to make money. We're not going to do anything. We're not here to make money. It's simple as that. We're here to have fun, talk some shit, get some good information that we think is right. And
I just think it's, you know, the radio's gone by the wayside and everyone's into podcasts. And Doug and I got together and just started talking. And we just said, hey, geez, why don't we just throw a podcast together and just talk about what we're talking about anyway?
Exactly.
And I think there's so many different topics and subjects. That's all I listened. It was a 4.5-hour drive down here. I listened to podcasts the whole time.
Yeah, my concern was like doing this podcast, is there enough listeners out there? And then I really like thought about it. I was like, you need a lot of listeners, but you can listen to 4 or 5 podcasts. It's grass season. I'm going to be walking or on my steel green for the next for 6 hours a day,
and
that's what I'm excited about is listening to all these, because when I'm in the office, I don't listen to the podcast, but when I get back on the lawns, I start catching up on the green grind. I just found this other one, or the Earthworks.
Earthworks is a good one.
I just found one on him, Jack, his name is. I met him at DLT's soil conference. It was great, and I found that podcast now, so I'll start listening to that one. So a lot of good information out there, and the more the merrier. I like I said, there's not enough of these podcasts out there. And that's one of my fear was like, dude, what am I doing? But it's good information, man.
And I think important for you to say and for us to say, you know, we're always looking for guests to come on. And I know you are too.
Absolutely.
It's, you know, 50 deep. Having more guests is just going to bring in more conversation, and same with you. You're in the service-based industry, so you have a broader spectrum, which is really cool. There's a ton of services out there across the country. This isn't New England-based that we're doing. We want to talk to you all and just spread your word out across the country, and actually we're international, which is really cool, and just have conversation. That's all. It's no different than being at a bar and just wanting to shoot the shit with people.
It's fun.
It's good times.
Fun. Well, listen, we got an event tomorrow. I will see you tomorrow.
Are you going down?
I'm going down.
Oh, cool.
Me and my main guy, Eric.
Oh, that's awesome.
The Silver Fox will be there. I got to get him.
I can't wait to meet him.
I got to get exposed to as much lingo as I possibly can, and these are perfect events to mingle with and to learn. And well, thanks so much, Kevin. I appreciate you stopping in the shop and checking out the place. And
my pleasure. I'm glad I came down.
Awesome.
I'm talking to you.